3 years from my surgeries. I'm taking a shower, and there on my head, along the scar, is the beginning of a pimple. In 30 seconds, I'm tripping into a cascade of what-ifs. What if this is another tumor? What if it's spreading? As the water pelts me, my fears run wild. I can see myself in the doctor's office, undressing for surgery, walking the halls in recovery, lying down for chemo, getting weaker, and dying. There and back in 30 seconds. My heart is pounding, naked in the shower. I so want to live. I am so awake, finally at peace. But what if this is true? What shall I do? Where shall I go? But in this moment, the shower rinses me over and over, and I come home. If this is true, if I am to die soon, I know what I will do. I sigh more deeply than I ever thought possible. I will finish my shower. In that moment, I learned that everything is right where we are. No matter our pain or distress, all of life is in whatever moment we wake to. I could clearly see and feel how our fear of death makes us run, though there is nowhere to go. Yet mysteriously I learned that there's a ring of peace at the center of every fear, if we can only get to it. Every time I shower now, I try to remember that we can't live fully until we first accept our eventual death. Otherwise, we are always running to or running from. Only when we can accept that we are fragile guests on this earth, only then will we be at home wherever we are. For your meditation, in the shower, let the water rinse your mind of both indifference and fear. Breathe fully and feel the clear drops hit your skin. Breathe deeply and give thanks for being alive. November 16th. The moment of dawn. There's a sun in every person, the you we call companion. Rumi. It's essential to realize and embrace the paradox that while no one can go through your journey for you, you are not alone. Everyone is on the same journey. Everyone shares the same pains, the same confusions, the same fears, which if put out between us, lose their edges and so cut less. A very touching story from the Talmud captures this soft paradox of how we all journey alone together. A rabbi asks his students, "How do you know the first moment of dawn has arrived?" After a great silence, one pipes up, "When you can tell the difference between a sheep and a dog." The rabbi shakes his head, "No." Another offers, "When you can tell the difference between a fig tree and an olive tree." Again, the rabbi shakes his head, "No." There are no other answers. The rabbi circles their silence and then walks between them and says, "You know the first moment of dawn has arrived. When you look into the eyes of another human being and see yourself." For your meditation, sit quietly and try to breathe your way to center. Simply breathe your heart open and try to feel both your aloneness and what you share with every other human being. Breathe deeply and slowly, and try not to comprehend this, but just to feel it. November 17th. Do you want to leave? Walls are worn away a grain at a time, and hearts are opened a feeling at a time. Susan and I were sitting in an ice cream parlor when the two couples next to us began to get very loud. They were just having a good time, but I was feeling a bit inward and intruded on. I felt the need to go. I leaned over to Susan and asked if she wanted to leave. She, in her contentment, said, "No, I'm happy here." Then, seeing consternation on my face, she asked, "Do you want to go?" In that simple moment in a booth in an ice cream parlor, I realized that for much of my 60 years, I have tried to take care of my needs by indirectly projecting them on those around me, and then acting as if I'm taking care of the other person. As the ice cream was melting, I understood myself. I laughed, shook my head. I felt embarrassed, then sighed deeply and importantly voiced the obvious. "Yes, I'd like to leave." This indirect way of trying to get what I need by planting my feelings as needs to be attended to in those around me has been a way to hide my vulnerability, while still managing to appear as a kind and other-centered person. I realize I'm not alone in this malady. It's often so subtle and so close to our healthy way of relating to others that we seldom realize the manipulation and deceit involved. Of course, this indirectness lives in us because somewhere along the way, we become convinced, often with good harsh reason, that to voice directly what we need is asking to be hurt. Yet I know of no other way to reverse this hiding of who we are than to catch ourselves humbly in each instance and to rise out of our private cave, admitting the indirectness and saying what we feel and what we need as soon as possible. Still, the energy wasted in trying to quietly get others to behave in ways that will satisfy our needs remains a major source of our anxiety and alienation. Rather than prevent us from being hurt, indirectness and dishonesty only heighten our isolation from what it means to be alive. Underneath it all is the fundamental truth that as trees have leaves that are nicked and eaten, human beings have feelings that are just as worn by the act of living. We have a right to these. They are evidence of our human seasons. For your meditation, recall the last time you asked someone to do something rather than express what you needed directly. What prevented you from expressing your needs directly? What were you afraid of? Imagine what you would have said if you had lived that situation more directly. Now practice expressing yourself directly by replaying that situation out loud, even though you are by yourself. Enter the day feeling the ease of living directly. November 18th. The Puppy in the Pound. Everyone can love in the place where they are. We can all add our share of love without ever leaving the room. Helen Nearing. At dinner, a friend who was interviewing for a job shared how she sometimes felt too eager for their acceptance. She said she found herself inwardly yelping like a puppy in the pound, "Pick me, pick me." We all laughed, because we all do this. At some point of inner confusion, we assume that we are orphaned of all gifts and possibilities. During these painful times, we imagine that we are so small in what we have to offer that we become desperate to belong anywhere at any cost. To make matters worse, we then hide parts of who we are, certain that if the potential boss or partner or new friend were to know all about us, they couldn't possibly accept us. Once inside this thinking, it's hard to repair, and the challenge repeatedly is to stop giving ourselves away. For what good is it if only a sliver of you remains? What good if only your ear is accepted and the rest of your body must be kept out of view? What good if only your obedience and good manners are accepted and the rest of your passion and personality must be kept in hiding? In truth, no one can live with a sliver, for slivers even of gold are near impossible to hold. for your meditation. Center yourself and bring to mind a time you felt the need to be accepted. Let that feeling come and go, and as you breathe, bring to the surface, if you can, that part of you that so wants to be loved. Breathe thoroughly, and let each inhalation be an embrace of your very human longing by your very ancient spirit. November 19th. That feminine thread. In how you have come is the secret to how you must go. In Greek mythology, there's a story of a man, Theseus, who in order to find his way home, had to find his way through a labyrinth that led him to a dark center where he had to kill a powerful beast, a minotaur. The only way he could return to the light of daily life was to trace back the thread he'd unraveled on his way in, which was given him by a kind woman, Ariadne. Stories like this carry wisdom we must encounter if we are to become whole. Each of us has a beast at center which we must confront if we are to live peacefully in our days. But like Theseus, making our way back into the light is only possible if we retrace with kindness and love our dark way in. This is how, after years of feeling mistreated, I can find myself mistreating others, and suddenly I am humbled. This is how, in giving myself away to be loved, I finally, after years, arrive at the dark, loveless center of that way, and the only way out is to follow the small thread of accepting who I am till it leads me back to where I began, except this time I weep to know my place in the world. For your meditation, sit quietly with your palms open. Breathe thoroughly, and in your right palm, meditate on the nature of your labyrinth, your way to your beast. Now breathe just as thoroughly, and in your left palm, meditate on the nature of your feminine thread, your way to the light. During your day, just open your palms and become familiar with both your labyrinth, your way in, and your feminine thread, your way out. Both are friends. November 20th. Commitment and risk. The moment one definitely commits oneself, then providence moves too. All sorts of things occur to help one that would never otherwise have occurred. A whole stream of events issues from the decision which no one could have dreamed would have come their way. W. H. Murray. We'd all like a guarantee before making a decision, or taking a risk. But the irony is that taking the risk is what opens us to our fate. It's like wanting to know what things will taste like before putting them in your mouth. It just can't be figured out that way. I always seem to be relearning that real commitment comes before I know where anything is going. That's what listening to your heart is all about. Without jumping off its perch, the bird would never fly. Without jumping out of your heart's silence, love is never possible. Without asking to be whole, the divine essence waits inside everything the way bread hardens if never bitten into. For me, as I look back, being a poet came after committing to speak, though I had no idea what I needed to say. And the grace of being loved has come into my life after admitting freely that I wanted to love, though I wasn't sure how. If we devote ourselves to the effort to be real, the universe in all its forms will find us, the way that wind finds leaves and waves find shore. For your meditation, center yourself and with each breath, commit your being to where you are. after a while, walk slowly about the room, and with each step feel commitment in the landing and risk in the lifting. November 21st. As far as we can manage. Wherever we stop is the summit. I was climbing Trail Ridge Road through the Rocky Mountains, determined to make the Continental Divide, when two sharp feelings pierced me almost at once. I, who have never had any trouble with heights, felt rushes of fear as I drove on narrow stretches 12,000 feet up. I was also filled with the irrevocable truth that everything there is wherever we are. This all made me stop and walk the tundra above the tree line. There, I was overcome with the sudden truth that I could go no farther, that I had no need to go any farther. Can it be that this journey through the mountains mirrors the journey through our lives? Is our suffering like the dizzying, gut-wrenching, narrow passes through these ancient rocks? Do we simply move on till we can't? And in accepting our humanity, does the peak come to us? What an unlikely truth. I traveled as far as I could manage, and there on the bare scalp of the earth I realized that where I can go no further is my destination. This is the wearing of heart that no one can escape. Despite all our noble efforts to reach some treasured peak, be it a dream of wealth or love, we carry the summit within. And it's always the effort and the exhaustion, the very journey itself, that opens the view which is everywhere. For the summit is not so much arrived at as we are worn open to it. I felt the truth of arriving at wherever my human limitations had left me, knew somehow this was enough, and I let out a cry like a vapor. We are as bare as these crags being worn by endless wind, and regardless of the maps we carefully draw and pass down, we arrive at what we've always had when we use up everything we've saved. In this way, we are brought to humility. Once accepting our frail humanity, we can see how stubbornly fragile living things are. We can see how it takes just a thin lick of water down a mountain crack to strengthen a root, and a bare lick of love through our stony hearts to blossom our soul. Earlier we asked these questions, which seem worthwhile to meditate on again. So breathe deeply and see what they touch in you now. What is it about being human that you are most grateful for? What is it about being human that continues to surprise you? November 22nd. Grief. If pulled, grief is a thread that will leave us naked in song. A friend took me to the redwoods where the trees talk with God, and it was a thick-barked tree 500 or 600 years old that made me think Grandma was near. It's been 22 years since she died, and though no one understands, I carry her behind my left eye where the spirit sees. I leaned into that ancient tree making small noises. The laurel leaves rustled. The younger trees creaked along with me. I miss her terribly. And though I resist feeling the loss and emptiness of not having her around, when I lean into that grief, it always in aftermath makes everything somehow more vibrant, more real. I've learned that grief can be a slow ache that never seems to stop rising. Yet as we grieve, those we love mysteriously become more and more a part of who we are. In this way, grief is yet another song the heart must sing to open the gate of all there is. In truth, there's a small one who suffers in each of us, an angel trying to grow wings in the dark, And as this angel learns how to sing, we lose the urge to hide. Indeed, when one heart speaks, all hearts fly. This is what it means to be great, to speak what feels unspeakable and have it release what waits in us all. For your meditation, sit quietly, and if there is some loss you are grieving, allow its feeling to move through you. Breathe evenly, and with each breath, imagine the angel in your heart trying to sprout its wings. Breathe deeply, and know that each feeling felt is another feather. November 23rd. Risk and Truth. Empower me to exercise the authority of honesty and be a participant in the difficult ordinariness of now. Ted Loader. Once there were two friends, and one was very daring in the way she met experience, always trying new things, always breaking new paths. The other was more timid in the world, but had the strength to look directly at the truth of any situation. They helped each other grow. In time, they fell in love and became partners, the one leading them into new experience, the other showing them the truth of where they'd been. This worked for many years, but eventually, the one who was daring wanted to go farther and farther into the world, and the one who could see the truth of things wanted to go further and further into his sense of truth. Eventually, they had to go their own ways, which was very sad. But the one who was daring had to discover her own ability to see the truth, and the one who could look directly at any situation had to discover his own ability to break new paths. It took another lifetime, but they met again, these friends who had become lovers, who had found their own way. And while each needed the other less, they now wanted each other more. For your meditation, center yourself, and as you exhale, open your heart to the place in you that risks. Breathe deeply, and as you inhale, open your mind's eye to the place in you that sees truth. Breathe steadily until your heart and mind's eye start to merge. Breathe evenly now, until the place in you that risks touches the place in you that sees the truth. November 24th. The Need to Continue. Older now, you find holiness in anything that continues. Naomi Shihab Nye. The longer I wake on this earth, the louder the quiet things speak to me. The more I experience and survive, the more I find truth in the commonalities we all share. The more pain softens me, the deeper my joy and the greater the lessons of those things that live in great stillness. Before I had cancer, I used to complain so much, annoyed that every chore would need to be done again, that the grass would grow back as soon as I'd cut it. Now I am in awe how it will grow no matter what you do to it. How I need that knowledge. Now, 22 years from that bed, I'm standing in a gentle rain, each drop a whisper of simple things I will never understand. Now there's only air in the sky of heart waiting to rain. Now I'm thinner, grayer, brighter, less able to say, and my heart has learned more on this side than it will ever let me know. Now I want to learn how to kiss an orange unpeeled and taste the juice. 22 years ago, the unasked-for growth disappeared, and praise this life I have been shedding ever since. Now, all that remains is my armless heart wanting to live. For your meditation, Sit quietly and consider your thoughts as leaves and your heart as the tree. Breathe slowly and try to listen to the soil you share with everything. Breathe deeply and meditate on what is oldest in you. November 25th. Compassion. I have just three things to teach. Simplicity, patience, compassion. These are your greatest treasures. Compassionate toward yourself, you reconcile all beings in the world. Lao Tzu. At first we might ask, how can being compassionate to yourself reconcile all beings in the world? To understand the gift of this, we need to recall the analogy of the spoked wheel, in which each life is a separate and unique spoke, and yet all lives, like those spokes, meet in a common hub or center. That's why when we tend our deepest center, we care for all souls. Another powerful way to realize our interconnectedness is to imagine the human family as a stand of aspens growing by a river. Though each tree appears to be growing independently, not attached to the others, beneath the soil, out of view, the roots of all the trees exist as one enormous root. And so, like these trees, our soul's growth, while appearing to be independent, is intimately connected to the health of those around us. For our spirits are entwined at center, out of view. Once realizing this, it becomes clear that we have no choice but to embrace the health of our neighbors as part of our own health. I felt this deeply in the many cancer rooms I sat in. I know these things to be true. In cutting off strangers, we cut off ourselves. In choking roots, we choke our own growth. And in loving strangers, we love ourselves. Having come this far, I believe that Lao Tzu's third instruction tells us that if we are aware of our own suffering with the wish to relieve it, we will overcome distrust and reestablish a close relationship with all other living things. In deep and lasting ways, when we heal ourselves, we heal the world. For as the body is only as healthy as its individual cells, the world is only as healthy as its individual souls. Across the centuries, we have this timeless medicine. Live directly, wait, and care for your soul as if it were the whole world. For your meditation, breathe slowly and feel your heart constrict and dilate as your eyes do. Breathe slowly and care for your soul with each breath. Feel your heart expand. Feel your sense of self open. Breathe slowly and feel your sense of the world open as you care for your soul. November 26th. The kinship of gratitude. When you make the two one, when you make the inner as outer and the outer as inner, then shall you enter the kingdom. Jesus. The goal of all experience is to remove whatever might keep us from being whole. The things we learn through love and pain reduce our walls and bring our inner and outer life together, and all the while the friction of being alive erodes whatever impediments remain. But the simplest and deepest way to make who we are at one with the world is through the kinship of gratitude. Nothing brings the worlds of spirit and earth together more quickly. To be grateful means giving thanks for more than just the things we want, but also for the things that surmount our pride and stubbornness. Sometimes the things I've wanted and worked for, if actually received, would have crushed me. Sometimes just giving thanks for the mystery of it all brings everything and everyone closer, the way suction pulls streams of water together. So take a chance and openly give thanks, even if you're not sure what for, and feel the plenitude of all that is living brush up against your heart. For your meditation, sit quietly and meditate on what keeps you from knowing yourself. Breathe deeply and lower your walls with an offering of gratitude that is not attached to any one thing. Now inhale with gratitude and exhale what remains in the way. Repeat this several times throughout your day. November 27th. The truth about mourning. There's a vastness that quiets the soul, but sometimes we're so squarely in the midst of life's forces that we can't see what we're a part of. The truth about mourning is that it's the small light of the beginning breaking through again and again. It's a wisdom so large and clear, one which carries us through our lives so quietly and completely that we seldom see it. Day after day, we're covered with the dust and grit of what we go through. It tends to weigh us down, and then we think and scheme and problem solve. Then we worry if it will all really work and if it's the right thing to do. It all makes us dark and cluttered. But despite our stubbornness of concern, we tire and must turn what has happened over to the hammock of night. This is a good thing, for no matter how unfinished we seem, the letting go into sleep is nothing short of a quiet miracle. This letting go into sleep is an innate reflexive form of meditation, no different than a fly rubbing its face or a doe licking its fawn. Sooner or later, without discipline or devotion, despite our resolutions and mistakes, we each must sleep. We must surrender to the quieting of all intent and regret so that the small light of the beginning can rise in us again and again. There's no escaping this profound simplicity. What happens covers us like dirt. It covers our hearts and minds till at the shore we call exhaustion, we slip into the waters of sleep in a daily sort of baptism so we can begin again. So whenever you feel urgent or overwhelmed, whenever you feel pressed to figure things out or to rethink the unthinkable, rest so that the endless beginning, which some call the voice of God, might break through what has happened, and you will wake feeling like dawn. This is a bedtime meditation. Breathe slowly and bring to mind one intention you had today, as well as one regret. Breathe evenly and let your breath blow the intention and regret far enough away that you can see them clearly. Center yourself and realize that though these thoughts and feelings come through you, they are not who you are. Leave these thoughts and feelings outside of you, and use each breath to bring you closer and closer to the letting go of sleep. November 28th. Devotion. Sincerity is that which flows out of your genuine innermost self. Without this, honesty is mistaken and insufficient. It's like trying to move in a boat without an oar. Mochimasa Hikita. It is one thing to see accurately. It's another to allow yourself to feel what you see with sincerity. And still another to allow your actions in the world to be formed by both honest seeing and sincere feeling. All this reminds me of the stained glass master in Europe who would teach three ways of seeing as necessary to create a sacred window. First, she would say, there's the need to see what image of life shapes the window. Next, there's the need to fill the window with color. And finally, there is the act, the pledge, to let it all come alive by placing it in the light. How like stained glass we are. Honesty enables us to discover the images of life that shape us, the images that scratch and stain us with experience. But these are nothing without the sincerity of heart that will fill them and us with color. And then, if we are to come alive at all, we must place ourselves in the light. We all know how sudden and brilliant a stained glass window can be, dirty and opaque one moment, and breathtaking as soon as the sun floods it and we can see it from the inside. We are the same, sacred windows in the making. So to place ourselves in the light and to see each other from the inside are the most important skills we can learn. When we do these things, we are practicing devotion. This may sound difficult, but it's no different than how we coordinate the eye, hand, and mouth to eat every day. It is basic and necessary, and after we learn, we do it every day without thinking. This is an eating meditation. Place a bowl of cereal or fruit before you. Breathe deeply and eat slowly. As you see your food, think honesty. As you lift your food, think sincerity. As you take your food in, think devotion. November 29th. The Angel of Relationship. The angel seeing us is watching through each other's eyes. Ricky Lee Jones. When we can look into each other, however briefly, without any agenda or scheme of desire or need, something indescribable and essential makes us more than we are by ourselves. This is the difference between looking in a mirror and looking into the eyes of someone you love. It seems the angel of relationship can only appear when our hearts pump our eyes open. It's such a powerful feeling that many things can go wrong. I can feel an aliveness that I think is only in you because it's been awakened between us. So I might only want to be with you and thus abandon myself. Or you, feeling stirred way down in your depth, might be frightened by such a feeling, and thinking it is I who poked you there, you might run from the most beautiful thing to come your way. But like the summer sun I chase to feel on my face, I am not it, nor is it me. Yet between us rises an unrelenting beauty that no one can have, though we can't live without it. For your meditation, sit with a loved one or trusted friend and breathe in silence while looking gently and steadily in each other's eyes. As you breathe, notice the feelings that rise between you and know that the angel of relationship is appearing and setting like the summer sun. November 30th. What we hold dear. What we hold dear can heal the world. There's an ancient story of a group of pilgrims searching for the Holy Land. They wandered for days to the bank of a very wide river. It was too deep to cross, and there was nothing to build with. One of the pilgrims prayed for guidance, and a voice appeared urging each to give up something they held dear. From this they could build a raft, for only that which they held dear would be strong enough to hold them up as they crossed into the Holy Land. There was immediate conflict and suspicion. The one who heard the voice was accused of trying to steal what mattered most to everyone. Finally, four of the stranded pilgrims agreed. Each offered what seemed useless to the others, a stone, a feather, a piece of driftwood, a page from a book no one understood. Mysteriously as they slept, the dearness they had placed in these things flowed together, and they woke to find a magnificent raft. Once on the other side, the one who gave up the feather heard another voice. It said that the Holy Land was right where they had landed. The four pilgrims settled on the far bank, within view of the others who would not cross. That night they burned the raft to cook their food, and the voices told them that the Holy Land is wherever what you hold dear holds you up, and then turns to food. The wisdom carried in this ancient myth is that what we fear is most private, mysteriously belongs to everyone. That is, once shared, the things we hold dear release a power that is healing. This is not to say that we should give up what is healing us in the midst of its becoming dear to us. Rather, the story urges us to relinquish personal icons so they may continue to heal others. It reminds me of a relic of a saint someone gave me when I was ill. A chip of bone from someone centuries ago who began a religion I wasn't a part of. But as I held this relic and prayed and worried and sweat through my own terror, it became precious to me. Once well, it became a sacred charm for me, until one day the person who gave it fell terribly ill and needed it back. I was afraid to give it up. I felt naked without it. But giving it up made everything holy. I have since, when the time proved right, given away other precious things I have lived with, crystals, books, personal treasures I have long enshrined, for only in use do they again become healing. It's the giving of what is dear that helps us cross the river. For your meditation, center yourself and meditate on something that has personal power for you, something you hold dear. It might be a shell or a stone that you have prayed with, or a special candle you burn when troubled. Breathe deeply and give gratitude for its dearness. Breathe deeply and pray for the clarity of heart to know if and when it might be right to give this dear thing to another. Don't act on this today. Don't give this up if you still need it. Don't hold on to it tighter if you fear letting it go. Simply breathe now with a willingness to know if and when such a moment might come.
December 1st. Candles and Cocoons. Dreams are candles to help us through the dark. Once used, they have to melt. Very often we define ourselves by what we want or dream of. I want to be an actor or a musician or president or a grandmother. I dream of being famous, of going down in history, of being a hero or a heroine. Yet when our lives shape us differently, we often think we've failed, that we're settling for less because we weren't good enough to become or have what we wanted. Certainly as we experience our limitations, this sometimes feels true. Yet even through our limitations, we evolve rather than fail, the way a caterpillar becomes a chrysalis, becomes a butterfly. And the succession of life's trials is precisely the unfolding we need to find our bliss and rightful place in the order of things. The truth is that what we want or dream of doesn't always last. It tends to serve its purpose in our development and then fades away, losing its relevance. And we can do enormous damage to ourselves by insisting on carrying that which has died. As a teenager, I wanted very badly to be a professional basketball player. My gifts were enough to hide my limitations for a while, and I played in high school and in college. But when I stopped playing my sophomore year, I discovered my calling as a poet. This carried me for almost 18 years until cancer opened me to the uncovered life of spirit. I didn't fail at being a basketball player, nor did poetry fail me. More accurately, my inwardness evolved with enough life experience so that moving bodily in the air evolved into the poet's dance of feeling, which then evolved into the spirit's grace of being. I no more failed in my desire to be a basketball player than the cocoon fails the butterfly, though the form of the dream was painful to lose. Living up to a dream is rarely as important as entering it for all it has to teach. For your meditation, try to recall the first dream that really took hold of you. What did you want from this dream? What has the dream taught you, and where has it led you? Is the essence of that dream still with you? Do you have a dream now? What is this dream teaching you? December 2nd. An invitation. Yours is to live it, not to reveal it. Helen Luke. Helen Luke was a very wise woman, deeply grounded in the life of the Spirit. I knew Helen during the last 2 years of her life. During that time, she was a mentor to me. These words are from our last conversation. They troubled me, for I have spent my life becoming a writer, thinking my job has been just that, to reveal what is essential and hidden. In the time since Helen died, I've come to understand her last instruction as an invitation to shed any grand purpose, no matter how devoted we may be to what we are doing. She wasn't telling me to stop writing, but to stop striving to be important. She was inviting me to stop recording the poetry of life and to enter the poetry of life. This lesson applies to us all. If we devote ourselves to the life at hand, the rest will follow. For life, it seems, reveals itself through those willing to live. Anything else, no matter how beautiful, is just advertising. This took me many years to learn and accept. Having begun innocently enough, there arose separations, and now I know that health resides in restoring direct experience. So having struggled to do what has never been done, I discovered that living is the original art. For your meditation, center yourself and think of your life as a story not yet written. Breathe slowly and relieve yourself of the responsibility to record your own story. Breathe deeply and imagine your path as the patch of sky a bird flies through. Now just breathe and fly. Enter your day and breathe and live. December 3rd. Hospitality. At heart, hospitality is helping another cross a threshold. Ivan Illich. In Dante's Divine Comedy, Virgil lovingly guides Dante through the hell of denial and the purgatory of illusion up to a passage of fire that Dante must cross alone, beyond which he becomes authentic. Earlier in history, Aaron guides his brother Moses off Mount Sinai back into the world, where the prophet must live what God has shown him. Even in Eden, if we can get past the punitive tellings we've heard so often, God ushers Adam and Eve to the threshold of the world, offering them the bruised and wondrous life of genuine experience that only those who are human can know. These are deep examples of spiritual hospitality, of helping kindred spirits further into their living. Truly, the most we can ask of others is for their guidance and comfort on the way, without imposition, design, or thought of reward. This is the hospitality of relationship. For family to help us manifest who we are in the world, for friends to bring us to thresholds of realness, for loved ones to encourage us to cross barriers of our own making into moments of full aliveness. This is the honest welcoming to table, without judgment of what we eat. Often the purpose of love is for others to guide us without expectation or interference, as far as they can go, so that we might begin. It reminds me of a dream I had when ill, in which I came to the edge of a forest, where the narrow lighted spaces called to me. I stood there through many opportunities, till an ageless woman of great resolve appeared, saying, "You can't start, I know, and if I were kind I'd see you halfway in. But I am more than kind. You must enter alone. I will meet you on the other side." I'm not sure if that feminine presence was God, or an angel, or the peace of my own spirit, but its strong and gentle guidance was enough for me to make it through, and I never saw her again. But now, when I love by clearing paths that I and others may or may not take, I feel her in my hands. This speaks to one of our deepest callings of love, that special hospitality for the injured, the strong action of compassion that makes it possible for those in pain to heal themselves. It calls mysteriously and arduously for the clearing of confusion and the comfort of what is real. It's the way that we who have suffered can take our turn, lifting the head of whoever has fallen, bracing their exhausted neck to drink, knowing we can never drink for them. For your meditation, breathe deeply and meditate on one act of guidance and comfort you have received that asked for nothing in return. As you exhale, offer gratitude for that gesture of hospitality. As you inhale, feel your own capacity for guiding without interfering. Feel your own capacity for giving comfort without needing anything in return. As you enter your day, practice anonymous guidance by leaving a gesture of kindness or truth in the path of others. Leave half a sandwich where the homeless gather, or leave a book open to a passage of wisdom, or leave a flower on a bus seat. Help the world by leaving a trail of who you are. December 4th. Work and Passion. Don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive and go do it. Because what the world needs is people who have come alive. Howard Thurman. I remember when in college, many of us were herded into teaching because there seemed a need in the job force. But by the time we graduated, teaching jobs were scarce. The same thing happened 15 years later when I was teaching college. Many of my students were herded into the study of business. A few years after graduating, though, there were very few jobs. This is another way that scarcity can direct our lives. Often when we shape our interests around what others need, we wind up selling our chance at happiness for what we think will be secure. But while supply and demand may work on paper, it can build a loveless life in the world. This is why finding what we love, though it may take years, is building a life of passion. For what makes you come alive can keep you alive, whether you're paid well or not. And beyond the fashion of the job market, a life of passion makes a healthy cell in the body of the world. For your meditation, center yourself and allow the things that stir you to come into your heart. It might be as simple as watching a candle flicker or running in the wind. Breathe freely, and just feel how these things affect your whole body and being. When you can, discuss with a loved one what makes you come alive. December 5th. Pursue the obstacle. Pursue the obstacle. It will set you free. When I came upon the mountain, I was in a hurry. I thought it would take too long to make my way around, so I set out to break a path through. Each rock and branch felt like a waste of time. If only the mountain weren't in the way. I cut my legs and arms as I rushed along. It grew harder to breathe, and I lost all sense of direction. Now I had to climb high enough to see. Once I broke the tree line, something in me had to see the top. Then I hurried my way up, and strangely, as I worked the climb, step after step, I kept rising but felt as though I were going nowhere. Finally, I broke the clouds. I had never seen sun on top of clouds. I sat in a clearing on a cliff, the light on top of my head like a cloud. Suddenly, reaching the top or getting beyond the mountain no longer seemed important. I liked it up here and felt that I could live on this mountain. But I had to return. I had to eat. I needed love. But now when someone asks about breaking through what's in the way or being in a hurry, I look both ways and say, pursue the obstacle. It will set you free. This story invites us to honor each obstacle as something flowing in its own right in the universal stream, to see ourselves and the obstacle as two limbs of the same tree drifting in the same river, bumping into each other, and even blocking one another for a moment. Looking at obstacles this way, we're asked not to oppose what blocks us as something mounting its will against our own, for the obstacle will simply give our resistance back to us. We're being asked not to empower or perpetuate the life of the obstacle, but to step aside if we can with openness to the energy of the obstacle, much like the ancient art of Aikido, where instead of blocking a punch, you help the punch move past you. All the while, we're invited to question that in us which insists that what's before us is an obstacle in the first place. It may not be so. It may be so. It may be something small that our history of struggle has enlarged into tragedy or bad luck. So if we can, we must focus on our relationship to the stream and not to the things being carried alongside us. If something appears to be blocking our way, we must try to understand what is moving it and what is moving us. If our movement in the world is still blocked, perhaps we are meant to be still. We must try not to damage ourselves unnecessarily by trying to force a movement to happen before its time. For your meditation, identify the biggest obstacle in your life at present. What is it keeping you from? Describe the obstacle as a piece of nature that has its own history. Is it like a shell being broken by the surf? Or a stone tumbling in a landslide? Or is it like a small deer frightened in the middle of a busy road? How is what you want or need colliding with what it wants or needs? December 6th. The Color of Truth. The best and most beautiful things in the world can't be seen or touched, but are felt in the heart. Helen Keller. There's an ancient Chinese art of painting on porcelain. It requires, more than skill and precision, a deep trust and patience in the process itself. It involves painting thin layers of pigment, one at a time, on the porcelain, letting each dry and soak into the porcelain itself. But even when dry, the pigment doesn't yet reveal its color. You never know what the color will be until the porcelain is fired in the kiln, that is, until the pigment is burned into the porcelain itself. This is remarkably like the life of questions that come from living. We use the brush of our feelings to paint our questions into our heart, but only after the fire of experience, only after our felt questions are burned by experience into our heart, only then do we see the color of truth emerge. So there are no answers to the deeper questions of living, only the emerging colors of truth which we must find the trust and patience to live into. For your meditation, sit quietly and bring to mind the color of a truth you have personally lived into. Using your breath, unravel this truth back to the questions you had before living it. Note the difference and share the story of this truth with a friend. December 7th. We have this choice. The heart is a strong shore and the ocean has many moods. With each day, we have this choice. We can build walls, block ourselves from the light, and suffer a dampness in the soul. Or we can live barely, shine on through, and suffer the nicks of erosion for living in the open. Most of us, myself included, live behind walls that were started by others and finished by ourselves. Very often we fear each other, the wall builders and those who shine on through. But it really comes down to how to make it through life, safely or fully. I confess this comes from one who struggles to shine on through, because in the end, not being touched by life is not that safe after all. What I've learned is that the more I risk being who I am, like a sun daring to shine, the thinner the walls need to be outside me. My first experience of this was a painful moment as a boy in which my mother ordered me to do something. We were alone in my room, and I said no. I don't remember what it was she asked of me, only that her demand was demeaning and unnecessary. I wasn't belligerent, just quietly firm. I remember fearfully building a wall as fast as I could in anticipation of her anger. I had barely prepared myself when she drew her arm behind her head and slapped me with a vengeance. The wall hadn't worked. My very soul had been struck. She went to strike me again. But by this time my soul had somehow reflexed into a strength of selfness that she couldn't penetrate. I glowed. She stalled in mid-swing and called my father to enforce her demand. He felt my brightness too, but held the line and struck me. By the time he landed, I was shining through. It hurt for sure, but I was protected. There are times walls are necessary, but more often we can protect ourselves by just being who we are. Neither hiding nor revealing ourselves will prevent our share of pain, but in being who we are, we get to be a part of the universal stream, not just a nut in a shell waiting to fall. For your meditation, center yourself and meditate by turns on your sense of the wall you look out from and on your sense of who you are that does the looking. Breathe steadily. As you inhale, close your fist and feel your wall. Breathe slowly now. As you exhale, open your hand and feel who you are. After a time, practice bringing who you are out beyond your wall by inhaling and exhaling with your hand open. After a time,